Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Players Podcast, brought to you by the Players Help Center. I'm your host, Bob Vachon, and I'm no expert, especially when it comes to talking about off-road vehicle suspension and adjusting it. Some of us buy our Polaris off-road machines for fun, and some of us for work. The way we set them up to perform these tasks can be very different. Now, while this may seem like a complicated topic, we're joined today by two experts to help break it down. Perry Raglin and Dave Helgeson join us from the Off-Road Suspension Group to help unravel the how and why of suspension adjustments on our Polaris off-road vehicles. So if you've been looking on how to get the best ride out of your Polaris machine, listen on. Hi, Dave. Hi, Perry. Thanks again for joining us on the podcast today. Before we get started jumping into everything about off-road suspension adjustment on our machines, can I just have you guys give a brief introduction of what you're doing around Polaris and how long you've been here?
All right, yeah, so I'm Dave Helgeson. I'm a senior staff engineer working in the off-road suspension group. I've been around almost 9 years, focused on suspension basically the entire time.
And I'm Perry. I've been around Polaris for 6 years. I'm a senior design engineer. I work on creation and calibration of the Ranger suspension steering components for the Ranger 570 and 1000 models.
Very cool. Perfect. Well, I think you guys are the perfect guest to have for this episode as we're diving all into everything we need to know about off-road suspension. To kind of get started with introducing this topic, what goes into a properly set up suspension for us? Why is it important that it's set up to our needs, our riding style? And from an engineering perspective, what's the design elements that make a good suspension?
Yeah, so I think the first thing that comes to mind for me is really, adjusting the suspension correctly for what you're doing with it is really going to give you the best, the best overall riding experience with our vehicles, right? So, you're going to get the best ride, best handling and the best bottom out the suspension can offer. If it's not set up correctly, some of those things may suffer a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, for a Ranger vehicle, we spend a lot of time on the suspension to make the vehicle ride exactly the way that we want it to and handle loads in a really specific way. And so getting the suspension set up to exactly how anyone is using the vehicle can go a long way for kind of enjoying that experience and getting more out of the vehicle.
Perfect. So we talked about why it's important to now. Say I just bought my Ranger, I have it home, it's riding somewhat rough. What are some takeaways that kind of are red flags of, hey, my suspension might not be set up properly? How is that going to look from a rider's perspective?
Yeah, so ride height is going to be the biggest variable for a Ranger. From the factory, we set them up at the lowest ride height, and that's to keep the box height low and the step-in height low, so that you can kind of get in and out and use the vehicle really easily. And for different use cases, such as adding a lot of weight to the box, or if you're putting a plow on the front, or perhaps if you want larger tires, you might want to consider increasing the ride height to kind of meet what your uses are for that vehicle. And you might be able to tell that if you kind of look at the vehicle from about 30 feet away, and you can tell it's stanced with either the front or the rear much higher, then you might want to consider adjusting the ride height to match the factory specifications, which can be found in the owner's manual.
So kind of going off that, we were talking about the owner's manual. Is that my go-to for finding the factory baseline settings? If, say, I bought one from the dealership or a used machine and I'm not sure if it's properly set up?
Yeah, I mean, across all of our product lines, the owner's manual has the factory settings listed, as well as the range of adjustment that we offer from the factory. So it's definitely the right place to start.
Now, kind of touching back to that, when do I need to adjust my suspension on my machine? I'm fairly new to the machines. I've gone on fair my own group rides with my teams. Typically we're just hopping from one to another with kind of no regard to setting it up right. When do I need to really dial in my suspension on my unit?
Yes, I guess I'd recommend, adjusting your suspension For sure, once the vehicle is no longer brand new after a small amount of miles, say, you know, a couple hundred miles, I think every vehicle I've ever driven and experienced changes a little bit from when it's brand new to when it has a little bit of time on it. So that's mm-hmm. both, you know, Polaris product as well as all the competitor units that we've been exposed to. So again, after a couple hundred miles, you should be checking your ride height and kind of assessing the suspension performance. The next time where you for sure want to make a suspension adjustment is after you've changed your vehicle by, you know, adding accessories or say you had a bunch of accessories on and you're not taking them off. That would also be a good time to, you know, reassess your suspension performance. The last time for me when I would want to make a suspension adjustment is if the vehicle is not doing something I want it to do and I want it to do it better, right? So I guess that's the topic we can get into later. I guess, Perry, do you have any additional comments there?
Elaborating a little bit on the accessories there, Dave. A few of the common ones that we see that would definitely be kind of red flags that you might want to consider adjusting your suspension to get the best performance would be heavy duty front bumpers, rear bumpers, adding winches to the vehicle that didn't come from the factory, roof racks, a lot of bed accessories for the Ranger I've seen can add a lot of weight. Anything that's more than, I'd say, 100 pounds in addition to the factory vehicle would definitely be something to a good time to consider adjusting the suspension to account for that weight properly.
Sounds good. All very, very good information. Now since we've assessed kind of the when we should look at it, how would we in fact go about doing these adjustments that we've just talked about?
Yeah, so I guess where I would start here is, you know, kind of regardless of, you know, what product line we're talking about, we've learned that really starting with the springs is absolutely the place to start. You know, the spring affects the suspension's movement in both the compression and rebound directions. So again, starting there is a way to go. Again, we have really good references in our owner's manuals for how to make spring adjustments and what the acceptable range to make is on a given vehicle. So again, start off with springs and make sure your ride height and springs are set correctly. From there, you could definitely move into damping changes if you have a vehicle with shocks that have adjustable damping. I guess the general kind of process we follow is if, you know, again, studying that ride height, you can either choose to set it with, you know, all the people that you'd normally have in the vehicle, or you could choose to set it for an unloaded vehicle. I think you can do either way. You just have to be consistent in how you're checking and setting it. So the way we kind of do that process is we do what's called scrub the vehicle out, which requires rolling the vehicle to a stop in a forward direction, at least 2 to 3 vehicle lengths to kind of let the suspension settle into kind of its happy normal position, and need to come to a stop without touching the brakes or the gas as to not affect the pitch attitude of the vehicle as it's coming to a stop. Again, that'll make sure you get the right neutral level position of the vehicle that it would want to be in. After it's come to a stop, you want to get out or have someone measure with you sitting in it, if that's what you're choosing to do, what your current ride height is. I guess you can do this kind of however you want. You just got to find your reference point you like. It's common to use, you know, either the skid plate on the center of the vehicle near either end of the vehicle, you know, front versus rear, or find a, you know, kind of handy position on the chassis or suspension to measure a little bit further outboard than that if you'd prefer. So again, once you have your initial ride height measured that way, I'd suggest you go ahead and repeat that process one more time and make sure you're getting a nice consistent number. You know, we've found again across kind of all vehicles that the actual ride height measurement can be a little bit, you know, finicky to get consistently. So again, I would suggest you measure it at least twice to make sure you're getting the right number or the consistent number. You know, once you do have a good consistent number, now you get out and you go make your spring adjustment, kind of again following along with the owner's manual. In some cases, a spring compressor may be very helpful to get the tension off of the springs as you make an adjustment. So you know, a spring compressor, you can either, you know, rent from an auto parts store for free or cheap, or there's plenty available to be purchased if it's something you want to invest in to have in your toolbox. So again, the overall process is you get the ride height, you make the suspension adjustment to the springs to change the ride height, and then you go back and check the ride height again. So you kind of repeat that process until you're happy with the new ride height you've achieved. And then you go back out and test it again. Check it out. See what you think.
Thanks, Dave. That was really informative. Now, are there any special features or considerations to keep in mind when it comes to adjustments for any of our vehicles?
Yeah. So something really unique that we do for the Ranger vehicles is that there's two shock positions for the upper shock mount. And what this does is it effectively makes the spring act as a more stiff spring. So if you're consistently carrying heavy loads, perhaps if you have a hood mounted rack for gear, or you're plowing all winter long, this is an adjustment that you might want to consider during the winter time, or if you're carrying a water tank in the rear, something where you have a lot of weight in the vehicle frequently, then you can move that upper shock mount to the outboard location, and that'll make the spring act more stiff without actually changing the spring. And then the other thing, the other way to adjust the ride height on a Ranger vehicle is all of our vehicles come with a spring preload adjuster, which is located at the base of the spring. And with the weight off of the vehicle, like on a jack stand or on a lift, you can use the factory supplied adjuster tool to rotate the spring preload adjuster, and that will increase or decrease your ride height depending on how you rotate that spring preload adjuster. And that can be a really useful tool for adjusting your ride height without making the spring any stiffer.
Wow, thanks for that, Perry. That's great information to know about our Rangers. Moving forward, when it comes to actually making these adjustments on our machines, are there any set processes of that we should follow so we can actually make sure that the changes we are making are going to be a positive change to our vehicle?
An adjustment, whether it's a ride height adjustment with the springs or, you know, shock position as Perry discussed on Rangers, or whether it's a damping change with either a dynamics equipped vehicle or a vehicle with clickers you have to get out and adjust. The general process we like to follow, when developing a vehicle is try to run the same piece of terrain or trail at the same speed consistently across your changes, so you're getting the best comparison. That's especially important if you're not particularly familiar with a vehicle, if it's, you know, newer to you, or maybe you don't get to ride it that often. So again, you'll find a piece of terrain or a trail that you like that you want to try to make your suspension work a little better in. You'll go kind of drive that trail and keep note of your speed and how you're driving, how you're using the steering wheel and how you're using the gas and brakes. You will stop, make your suspension adjustment, and then go and redrive that trail. So again, when you're redriving the trail after making your adjustment, you're trying to drive the vehicle in the exact same way as you drove it the first time, so you can really feel the difference you made with the suspension and not necessarily feel a difference in your driving instead. Once you've made that drive, you should be able to tell if you did or didn't make a change you like. If you didn't like the change, by all means, take it back out and try something else. Or if you did like the change, awesome. Now you think about the next thing you want to change and go from there. We'll talk about making changes too. We typically prefer to make a change on one end of the vehicle only at a time, just because there can be a lot of, non-intuitive things about suspension adjustment where you make an adjustment to front suspension that you end up actually feeling in the rear suspension. So make one adjustment at a time. Try to run the same trail consistently before and after the adjustment. And then the last thing really is when you're making an adjustment, by all means, make a big enough adjustment that you can feel. So, for example, if you have a shock with a adjustable clicker, if it's the Fox QS3 clicker with three positions, those positions are a large enough difference where one position change should be noticeable while driving. But if you have a different shock package, like say the Walker Evans with a low speed compression adjuster that has 16 clicks, try like 4 to 6 clicks at a time for an adjustment, and then see if you can feel a difference. If 4 to 6 clicks feels like too much, you can go back and take, 2 or 4 clicks back out of it to kind of land in the middle, depending on what your initial adjustment was.
excellent advice. Thank you so much for that. I think you really broke it down well to, you know, go step by step and make the process seem more simple than what it really is. I know myself, when I think about suspension adjustment, it can be very overwhelming with, you know, high speed, low speed compression, ride height, all these different factors. But, you know, great advice to just break it down, go one at a time, run the same route consistently so you can actually feel the changes to the vehicle and really understand what those one, two clicks make on your vehicle.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, too, though, if you are a much more experienced rider with like really good ride feel, you know, like you've been riding for a long time and you got a lot of hours and miles in, you can get a little more fast and loose with the adjustments. So you may not need to go back through and, you know, run the same trail at the same speed. You know, again, you may have a good enough feel for your vehicle and how it rides that you can make an adjustment and just continue on with your day trail rider or whatever, and just kind of, you know, stop and make changes throughout your day versus stopping and running the same loop over and over or something like that. So
absolutely. Good to know. So now that we've gone over the details of the why and the how of suspension setup, let's go into details of what we should be looking for and how we should be setting up our vehicles for different types of riding. Let's say performance and trail riding versus more utilitarian purposes such as towing and hauling.
Yeah, so my initial thoughts there are that typically for play, you kind of want the most balanced vehicle you can deliver, front versus rear, to give you the best experience. However, for towing and hauling, you're probably okay trading off some of that, you know, balanced suspension performance just to improve the rear axle load carrying. So again, you may not make an even suspension adjustment front and rear. You probably just adjust the rear axle to improve towing.
Yeah. So for suspension setup specifically for towing, it might depend what you're trying to accomplish. For example, I think tongue weight would be one of the biggest things to consider for the vehicle suspension. If your tongue weight is really light, then it might not impact the suspension performance of the vehicle all that much. However, if you're really heavy on the tongue, you might want to consider some of these options, like moving that rear shock to the outboard position or increasing the spring preload adjuster a few notches. Something else to consider as you're adjusting that rear ride height of the vehicle is that it will affect your approach and departure angle of the full system with the trailer and the vehicle. So just keep that in mind as you're making these ride height adjustments of how it's going to affect where that hitch interacts with the trailer.
So. Definitely good points. Good to know kind of all around. So now that we've got that under control, one feature that, you know, particularly our Razor units have is the Dynamics equipped suspension on those units. Now, you know, working in the help center, we get a lot of questions around there. When should I use what mode and how's it work? Can you guys give us a quick rundown of what Dynamics is and, you know, kind of a general overview and what settings are beneficial to what particular terrain or style of riding?
Yeah, so we'll start with kind of what the system is. And I'll say also that we have a lot of other good, you know, marketing information out there for how the system actually works and what it's doing. But I guess in short, it's kind of looking at what the vehicle's doing through a series of inputs. So we have, you know, the vehicle speed. We have a what's called an inertial measurement unit that can detect if the vehicle is, you know, cornering, braking, accelerating, etc. And then after, you know, we kind of understand what the vehicle is doing, then we change the shocks to kind of be doing, you know, the best thing they can be doing for that vehicle behavior. So, you know, the damping is adjusted based on vehicle speed, whether or not you're cornering, whether or not you're braking, whether or not you're accelerating. And then on some of our newer models, we have that Dynamics Red X or Pucker button, depending on who you talk to, that, you know, can firm the suspension up if you see something coming in the trail you want to have a firmer suspension setting for. So, again, it's kind of actively working to minimize the trade-offs that come with stiffer versus softer suspension. As far as picking what Very mode cool. to be in, I mean, in all honesty, there's really no wrong answer. It's really whatever you want. And what I like to do is I like to change it a lot when I'm driving. You know, it's super easy to change, again, especially with our newer vehicles that have the steering wheel controls. There's really no reason not to change it. So on our Dynamics 2.0 models that have three modes, comfort, sport, and firm, Again, comfort mode is generally for, you know, either lower speed operation and more technical terrain, or if you're driving faster but on a trail that isn't particularly rough and you'd prefer to have a more comfortable ride versus a more control ride, again, you might pick comfort mode. Sport mode is more appropriate on a flatter trail or a less rough trail where you want a little bit better body control and handling, or maybe a little bit improved bottom out. And then lastly, the firm mode is the firmest mode in Dynamics 2.0 for, you know, more aggressive technical terrain with larger bumps, or when you're trying to drive faster and just want more control. On our Dynamics DV vehicles, so that's the Razor Pro R and Razor Turbo R we just came out with in November, there's four modes. So there's Comfort, Track, Baja, and Rock. Comfort mode on Dynamics DV is pretty similar to, you know, the Dynamics 2.0 model. Allows a lot more suspension movement, definitely more comfortable, but trades off kind of, you know, body control. Again, good for either slower speed operation on rougher terrain when you just want comfort, or if you're going faster on not particularly rough terrain and you want to prioritize, you know, the comfort of the ride over the control of the body. The track mode in Dynamics DV helps to drastically improve the body control. So if you are going to go, say, drive harder or faster on a flatter, less rough trail, it'll give you, you know, a little bit better confidence. You know, through the changes we're making there too, we actually do slightly like dynamically reduce the ride height of the vehicle, so it does feel a little lower, which helps improve the handling. Conversely, the Baja mode in Dynamics DV kind of gives you a little increased ride height dynamically, so the vehicle feels taller, and that helps give you more upstroke for like really large aggressive terrain, like, you know, big Southwest U.S. terrain, whoops, or things like that. Finally, Rock mode at real low speed kind of looks at the tilt angle of the vehicle, both, you know, left to right and fore and aft, and then attempts to make damping changes to dynamically change the ride height to keep the vehicle low and flat. So again, it's trying to like lean you into the corner, or not into the corner, it's trying to lean you into like a hill or a piece of technical terrain you're trying to pick your way up when rock crawling. At higher speeds, the rock mode kind of turns into a more general mode similar to comfort mode, but again, you know, lots of options. Definitely feel free to try whatever you want. You know, suspension is a very subjective, preferential thing where, like, everyone doesn't necessarily have the same opinion about what they would prefer for a given set of terrain.
The Dynamics equipped vehicles are very cool. They certainly take a lot of the guesswork in terms of on-trail adjustments completely out of it. Rather than having to pull over and, you know, adjust with ride height or compression, we can simply just hit a button and the machine takes care of it for us. So very cool system to have on our Razors, and very useful indeed. Now, to switch gears a little bit here, we've talked about the different types of adjustments that we can make and how they affect our ride. Well, when it comes to actually making them, none of it really matters if our suspension is worn out or ill-maintained. So what are some tips or tricks that we can do to make sure that our suspension systems are up to tip-top shape, so when we do have to go make those adjustments, they are actually meaningful and doing something for us?
Yeah, I think the owner's manual is going to be the best place to check first for understanding your vehicle's service intervals, and there's been a lot of engineering put into those service intervals, so it's a great thing to rely on. Some of the things to kind of keep an eye out for is kind of loose ball joints or suspension control arm bushings, and those can be checked with the vehicle up on the lift and grabbing the tire at the top and bottom or front and back and adding kind of a force to those locations to see if there's any play in the system. And if there is, then that's something they might want to work with your dealer on updating those parts to remove all of that play from the system. And that will keep the vehicle driving like new as long as you can keep up on that service.
Yeah, something else to mention on service too is, you know, a shock can have no visible external issues, but it is possible for the you know, the internals to need some attention. So like specifically on monotube shocks, just kind of due to the typically harder life they have from, you know, being run more aggressively on like sport vehicles, they may benefit from a proactive rebuild before you have, say, a dramatic shock issue or like oil leaking out of the shock. So just kind of naturally over time as they're used, the oil will degrade and break down a little bit. This is kind of across all shocks, all OEs kind of have the same issue. Again, the oil will degrade a little bit and slightly change the damping performance of the shocks from when they were new. I would say if you're looking for the absolute ultimate performance out of your sport vehicle with a monotube, you know, Fox or Walker Evans shock absorber, definitely pay attention to the factory recommended shock rebuild intervals and, work with your dealer or your local Fox or Walker service representative to get your shocks refreshed.
Perfect. Great advice. And one kind of little caveat to add in there, say I have been maintaining my unit, but something's just not adding up in how the vehicle's riding. What are some signs when I drive my unit of that, you know, maybe there's a failure in a shock or something? What would that look like when I'm out on the trail or, you know, hauling something down the road?
Yeah, I guess as far as a shock failure goes, you could notice inconsistent vehicle behaviors when driving left versus right. If you have, again, one shock that's not functioning properly, you'll probably notice decreased suspension capacity or like the increased propensity to bottom the suspension out if you're driving in harder bumps. Again, in extreme cases, you'll see oil coming out of the shocks if they're very, very bad. But again, that's a little easier to spot. I guess really it's if you just start to notice that the suspension performance is changing on the vehicle, but you haven't made any changes to the vehicle as far as adding or removing any weight or making any suspension adjustments.
All right. Any final considerations that you'd like to offer up to our listeners?
With suspension being not very straightforward. So I guess once upon a time I had the idea that more ride height is always a good thing, but with more experience driving the vehicles, there's definitely some trade-off. And just going to describe a few of those situations where more ride height or less ride height, especially in a Ranger vehicle, can be favorable. So in addition to kind of keeping the vehicle low for stepping in and out of the vehicle and keeping the box low, a lower ride height will also perform well trail driving where there's a lot of corners. The vehicle will stay a lot more flat and handle better with that lower ride height. But if you are consistently going over some large features like rocks or down trees, that's going to be a great time where you want to consider increasing the ride height of your vehicle to do better with that type of event.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Perry. You know, what we learned during suspension calibration when developing vehicles is that the final suspension calibration is really, it's a trade-off between a lot of things. We set the vehicles up from the factory to kind of work well for what we expect most riders to do in most conditions. But depending on your specific use, there may be some benefits for you tuning it for you a little bit, you know, uniquely. So again, like Perry mentioned, you may, for your use, want a higher ride height for increased ground clearance on technical obstacles, but that will likely have a detrimental effect on handling. You know, you may notice there's more body roll, the vehicle is slower to turn in. Alternatively, if you maybe don't need as much ride height, like say you're on a pretty flat trail, but it's really twisty and, you know, kind of fun to go, rail corners on, you may actually want a lower ride height and then, you know, kind of the reduced body roll and improved handling that comes with that. So, again, it's adjusting your suspension is just as much to get it optimized and operating as it should from the factory as much as it is to kind of tune it for you and your specific needs.
Well, Dave, Perry, thanks again so much for your time today. You guys broke down a complicated topic into a pretty easy to understand thing. So definitely appreciate your wealth of knowledge today. Hope to have you guys on the podcast soon. But until then, we'll see you next time. Thank you, Dave, and thank you, Perry, for joining us today to shed some light on a complicated topic. Also, a big thanks to all of you for listening, downloading, and subscribing. If you liked what you heard,
feel free to give us a 5-star rating. We'd also like to extend a special welcome to any first-time listeners out there. If you're new, make sure you browse our archives for more tips on off-road vehicle ownership. Check the description of this episode for some helpful links, including those to the Polaris Help Center and Polaris YouTube channel. Also, look out for the Contact Us link. If you have a question or idea for a future episode, we want to hear from you. Now, stay tuned for future episodes, and until next time, this has been the Polaris Podcast. Oh, hey again, it's your host Bob here. I just wanted to pop in to remind you that riders should always wear helmets, eye protection, protective clothing, and footwear. Read, understand, and follow your owner's manual. Never ride under the influence of drugs or alcohol. Ride within the limits of your own abilities, and never engage in stunt or exhibition driving. Okay, I'll be seeing you.